Hey, everyone. My name is Maggie Wilkins. I'm the state field coordinator with the League of Education Voters. Thank you for joining us today. This is the second webinar in our series of lunchtime webinars on effective teachers and principals. Our goal is to bring you succinct info sessions at the lunch hour on some of LEV's top education priorities. We've also worked to create these webinars in a fashion that helps build a base of knowledge for advocacy. Each topic we've selected includes three presentations. The first of the three in each series will engage advocates on a personal level. We're hoping to provide some tangible skills for you and your young person to help navigate the public school system. The second presentation in the series helps put context to the issue. Many of the barriers we face in the schools as individuals are actually quite common to parents, guardians, and families. Through sharing and building relationships, we help empower ourselves to keep advocating. The third webinar in the series will bring you a bright spot, or an example of best practices. In advocacy and social change, it's important to share your vision that outlines how you think schools should be, not merely what we believe is unjust. The format is simple. We're going to dive right into a presentation from our guest, and then we'll wrap up a few minutes early so our presenter can answer questions from the audience. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to pose questions to the presenter. Please remember to be respectful, as all this information is public and will be archived on our website for later access. Lastly, visit our webpage at www.educationvoters.org in order to view the full list of past and future webinars. Today we'll hear a presentation from Shelby and Margo of Teachers United, or TU for short. And TU is a statewide network of educators who are working to create the public education system our Washington students deserve. They'll present a few findings on the qualities that contribute to an effective teacher and give us an overview of Washington's teacher evaluation system. Thanks for joining us today, Margo and Shelby. Please take it away.
Hi, this is Margo. I want to first thank Maggie for talking a little bit about TU. I wanted to speak a little bit more to where we're coming from in terms of evaluation. So one of the things TU does is we hold policy teams in which a group of public school teachers in Washington will research an issue. Hello? We'll research an issue that the network has chosen. And so last year, one of the three issues that our network chose was teacher evaluations. So we had a group of teachers research and conduct interviews about evaluations and eventually develop a set of recommendations. So that's sort of where we're coming from. If you were at the last webinar, our executive director, Chris Eide, talked a little bit about the aspects of effective teaching and its impact on students. And so what we're going to do today is talk about how that relates to evaluations and what's going on in terms of the changes in Washington's evaluation system. And then just for reference, on the 19th of December, we're going to talk about how evaluations can improve student achievement. So let's get into it. Before we talk about the nitty-gritty of Washington's evaluation system, I wanted just to address the big question here, which is why are we even talking about evaluations at all? And the reason is that they're directly linked to student success. So the way a teacher is evaluated and the way a teacher is helped to grow directly affects students. Something Chris talked about last time was that we know that a teacher has the biggest impact on a student's success, and so because of that, teachers really need quality feedback, whether that they're a struggling teacher or they're the best in their school building. One of the issues right now is that in the same school, teachers can vary really wildly in terms of their strengths. So a student in down the hall from another teacher could be having a very different quality of education. So it's really important that all of those teachers are being evaluated and being helped to grow. The other thing we want to talk about here is that administrators really need good evaluations because they need the tools to make more objective and informed decisions about who's in their schools and also how to place teachers within their schools. And Washington's not the only state that's looking at this as an issue. It's actually being nationally recognized right now. So more than half the states in the country are changing their evaluation laws. In fact, Washington's one of 31 states to change its evaluation system in the last 3 years alone. So let's take a look at the system itself.
So looking at the past, essentially how teachers have been evaluated in Washington,
it's something that's really important to note is that there was just a really a two-tiered system. It was binary. Either a teacher got a rating of satisfactory or they received a rating of unsatisfactory. Most of those ratings were based just particularly on teacher actions in the classroom, with a little bit of information about the classroom environment. It's also important to note that it was based on just a small number of observations per year, which could even be as few as just one formal end-of-year observation. Usually, or often, this resulted in just an automatic endorsement of a teacher's practice. And then it's important to note that the PASS system also wasn't linked to any staffing decisions. So personally, my end-of-year evaluation was based on two different components. It was based on one 10-minute informal observation and then a 30-minute formal observation. And when my assistant principal came into my classroom for that formal observation, he was actually called out twice during the observation, and then he told me in our follow-up conversation, he usually gave new teachers the same two areas for growth. And sadly, this from our conversations with teachers in our network, we know this isn't really an anomaly. We teachers haven't been able to engage in meaningful conversations about what they're doing well and where they need to grow, unless oftentimes they take the personal initiative and maybe bring in a teacher from across the hall, say, to come in and tell them how things are going, you know, so they get those peer observations, or they go the extra step and maybe bring an administrator in as well. Which brings us to our new system, which is TPEP. That's an acronym. It stands for the Teacher Principal Evaluation Project. So the TPEP actually came about starting in 2010. The legislature thought this is such an important thing that needs to be happening. The way that teachers are evaluated needs to be something that we address at a state level. Started off with Senate Bill 6696. So 2010, legislature comes out. They create a pilot, and they create a steering committee to oversee that pilot. So 2 years later, fast forward, it's 2012, and another bill comes out, 5895, and they continued to flesh out what they'd started talking about in 2010. So in 2012, basically they added to that initial framework that they had that required districts to choose from one of three, basically, frameworks about how to evaluate teachers, and it explicitly said that all teachers had to receive a comprehensive evaluation at least once every 4 years. And then the last piece is they added the school board to the steering committee. So there's a steering committee overseeing all of this teacher principal evaluation project, and it's comprised of all the stakeholder groups. We have OSPI as part of that steering committee. We have teachers, we have principals, we have administrators, we have parents, and then school board members as well.
So let's take a look about what's different about TPEP. So one of the things that Shelby said about the old system was that it was two-tiered. It was binary, either satisfactory or unsatisfactory. The new system's more nuanced, so it's four-tiered. It can rate a teacher as unsatisfactory, basic, proficient, and then the highest would either be called innovative or distinguished, depending on the framework we're using. The other really important thing here is that it emphasizes not just teacher actions, so something that, whereas before an administrator would come in and observe a teacher and rate that teacher based on what they're seeing in the classroom environment, right now it's still doing that, but it's also tying it to results. So how are students actually learning as a result of those teacher actions? And the key thing here is that it's using multiple measures of student learning to do that. So I just want to quote Senate Bill 5895, what it has to say about that. So, quote, student growth data that is relevant to the teacher and subject matter must be a factor in evaluations and must be multiple measures. So something that a lot of people think is when you're tying results to an evaluation, it might just be from one standardized test. And it's true that a state formal standardized test, that data could be used as one of the measures. But what multiple measures means is that district and school-based assessments, as well as informal classroom-based tools from the teacher, him or herself, can also be used as a measure. So it's holistic. In addition to that, TPEP includes some more rubrics. So it expands the way a teacher's evaluated to include things like professionalism and teacher development. So it has a strong emphasis on whether the teacher is learning and growing in his or her profession. The fourth thing we want to note is that it explicitly ties evaluations to staffing decisions, specifically when a teacher is moving from a provisional to a continuing contract status, or also when a struggling teacher is decided whether or not they can remain in the classroom. However, we want to note that that's just one factor in terms of staffing decisions. It's not the only one. It's just saying that it must be a factor. And the last thing we really want to note here is that the bills also state that the principals must be trained in the new system so that there's some normalization across the schools and across the districts in terms of what does a basic meaning standard mean, what does proficient mean, so there's some consistency across the districts. One thing I noted here was that there's different frameworks or different languages, something like innovative versus distinguished, and what that's referring to is the bill gives some flexibility to districts in terms of the framework or basically the set of rubrics that a district's allowed to choose, and the state has given flexibility of three different ones. So the first one's called CEL, and that's from University of Washington. The second one is Danielson, Charlotte Danielson's framework for teaching. And the third one is Robert Marzano's teacher evaluation model. So if you look at this slide, it kind of gives you a sense of how different districts have chosen which framework to use. I just took out some that you might find interesting based on where we are. So Federal Way, Tacoma, Kent, and Auburn have chosen CEL. Seattle, Issaquah, Highline, Mercer Island, and Renton have chosen Danielson. Spokane, Mount Baker, and Mount Vernon have chosen Marzano.
I just want to emphasize, when you're looking at this infographic here, you see that students across the state are in classrooms where teachers are being evaluated under different models, and you might have questions about, well, what does that really mean? What's the implication there? Is somebody going to get a different education as a result of this? All the frameworks are emphasizing the same themes, and those are around professional learning and then actions that are tied to results. So in each of the frameworks, there's repetition of ideas and sometimes even exact wording. So there's planning and preparation comes up in the Charlotte Danielson domains, and then in the Marzano domains, it's called preparing and planning. Classroom environment is something that's repeated across the CEL dimensions, the Danielson domains, and then professionalism is something that appears in all of them. So there are a lot of areas of confluence between each of these.
And I just wanted to give you a sense of what does this rubric actually look like. So here's a snapshot of one of the domains from the CEL rubric, that's University of Washington. So one thing you can see is that it's four-tiered. And then the other thing that's interesting to note is that in addition to just what the rubric says for this standard, it also gives some observables so that if someone's coming into the classroom, you can kind of know what to look for, basically. And so this is in comparison to a snapshot of Danielson's, which is very similar. There's attributes, there's four tiers, and something else that's interesting to note here is this is one of these expanded rubrics that includes evaluation on whether a teacher is reflecting on his or her practice, which hasn't been part of the system in the past.
So looking at implementation of this teacher-principal evaluation project, districts are required to begin implementation this year across the state, and then with complete implementation happening by the 2015-2016 school year. All of this implementation started as early as 2010. There were 50 districts that applied to be part of the pilot program. A handful were selected. Few districts at this point have fully implemented TPEP. One district in particular that we want to highlight that hopefully you'll hear more about on the 19th is Anacortes. Our policy director and our policy leaders who were studying this actually met with teachers and officials in Anacortes where TPEP has been fully implemented. So they're doing an incredible job there, and the question is why? And one of the biggest factors that has come up in these conversations with people in Anacortes is that union and district officials are working there really closely. There's close collaboration between union and district, and then teachers are also really closely involved in this rollout process. They don't feel like TPEP is just something else that's being thrown at them that they're going to be required to comply with. Rather, it's something that they're fully invested in and part of. Something else that's really great about what's going on in Anacortes is that parents are being included as valuable partners and making TPEP work really well. So what we've heard anecdotally is that, for instance, if there's an early release day for students for staff training, the district actually explains how that training is going to help impact student achievement. So they're making the ties clear to everybody who's involved in the process. So close to home, since we're in Seattle, Seattle wasn't one of the official pilot sites, but because of the 2010 contract, it's actually put SPS ahead of the curve, and implementation is in full swing here.
So you just heard a lot about the nitty-gritty of the system, so I just want to pull back a little bit and ask the question, why are we going through all of this? It's a huge rollout. All the districts are putting a lot of work into it, teachers, administrators, superintendents. So why are we doing this in the first place? So the biggest thing to emphasize here is that we know teaching is complex. Something Chris talked about is just how many different dimensions go into being an effective teacher. And so because of that, effective evaluations really need to show that complexity and, as a result, be comprehensive, which TPEP is more comprehensive than in the past. And I really want to say here that teachers and principals all across the state are really excited to have more meaningful evaluations. They want a better system where they can have a roadmap to improve instruction and ultimately help students. And again, comprehensive evaluations are intended to help all teachers, whether they're struggling or whether they are having great results in the classroom. Because teaching is so complex and there's so many different dimensions in the TPEP frameworks, any teacher can really find a place to grow and become better. And again, this is a national movement. Race to the Top has emphasized it, and many states are changing their system because they know that it's such a critical issue. But the other thing I want to address here is that it's not just about being comprehensive that's important. It is also really important that the rollout is well implemented. And that's what's happening right now. So we've chosen this new system, but we need to make sure that it's being done in the right way.
So quickly, let's look at where we are right now. Like Margo just said, we're in the midst of the TPEP rollout, and just this past week, OSPI issued a report. This quote is part of the report, and I think it gives a pretty clear picture and pretty hopeful one as well. Washington's making huge changes in teacher and principal evaluation. Educators and policymakers have the same goal, excellent instruction and strong leadership so all students achieve. Educators are learning a common language, setting clear expectations, and basing their own improvement goals on what students need. One thing that we also want to be careful of during implementation is just avoiding potential pitfalls. And from what we've seen in other states, I think at the beginning of this conversation we mentioned that Washington's one of 31 states that has just recently revamped its evaluation system. From what we're seeing in other states, if principals aren't trained on how to use the evaluations, if they're not normed in terms of what each of those four categories looks like, and if they aren't given the sufficient time to conduct these evaluations effectively, essentially what happens is the multi-tiered system becomes a binary system, and almost all teachers are rated as proficient or higher. So we want to make this, we want to avoid this. We want to make this new TPEP system doable for principals, and part of that is, again, in the next call, hopefully this will be addressed, but just using multiple measures, so including peer observations in all of this, including information from student perception surveys, really getting this comprehensive picture. Overall, we also know that it's just important to ensure that implementation is supportive and that it's connected to opportunities to improve. This can't be a gotcha system where a teacher feels like somebody is just going to come in and rate them, and then they aren't given any tools for growth. So we need to make sure that principals have options to offer teachers that are actually connected to the domains where the teachers need to grow.
So we just threw a lot at you, big and small, big picture and small picture. So I want to just overview the takeaways before we throw it to questions. So the first thing here is that evaluations really are an important tool, and that's because they're directly connected to student learning. And because of that, teachers find effective evaluations helpful. It's a positive thing. This is a national movement. People are recognizing this, and Washington has joined a majority of states in revamping its evaluation system in recent years. And this new system, TPEP, is more comprehensive than the past system, and one of the key changes is that it incorporates results and student growth in addition to teacher actions and how it evaluates educators. And The thing that we really want to emphasize here, why is this important, even though we have adapted the new system, and that's because implementation is critical and really crucial to making sure that we don't just nominally have a new system, but that there's really meaningful change that positively impacts students. So I just want to sort of end this part with a quote from the recent OSPI report from this week, and this is from a teacher, quote, "I haven't met anyone in the education family that doesn't want this new evaluation system to work because we all want to do best for our kids." And I think that's really the sentiment across the state. So one thing I've added to these slides, which you can download after the presentation, are some links to some key resources if you really want to dig in some more. And I also just want to thank you before we open up to questions.
So we've been talking about this next webinar on December 19th. It's so important to talk about best practices and what really is going well. If you can and if you're available, definitely join that one. It's going to be all about using teacher evaluations to improve student achievement. And then because you're gaining so much information right now, I wanted to also plug Lev's annual activist training that's in January. Teachers United is also going to be having some advocacy 101 sessions, and that's where you'll be gaining some really crucial tools to help you put into practice everything that you're learning and that you're passionate about. So with that, thanks again, Maggie. We'd love to open it up if you have any questions.
So if there are questions, feel free to type them in through the chat function. We'll wait a couple minutes.
While people are thinking, I also just want to say you can always feel free to email us or Chris, who did the last webinar, at teachersunitedwashington.org. You can find our email addresses there if the questions come to you later.
Great. We have one question here. How is Anacortes tying their professional development time with student achievement?
That's a great question about how PD is linked to evaluations. Something else that we didn't explicitly mention here, because it'll be more in the next webinar, is that part of making sure implementation goes well, and one of the things that is tied into the bill, the TPEP bill, is that professional development has to be in place so that students aren't given an evaluation and don't know what to do with it and don't know how to improve. I don't have the Anacortes report right now with me about how they specifically are tying PD in with student achievement, but I can follow up with you after if you'd want some more specific information on that district.
Shelby and Margo, I had a question. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot in Seattle and elsewhere around the state that some districts might include student growth measures in the teacher evaluation, and it seems like, you know, kind of a controversial issue. Could you just talk a little bit about that and your experience with it?
Yeah. So, again, one of the things that is in the bill is multiple measures, and so that's really what the student growth measures is talking about. So I said before that, yes, that can include and will include formalized state assessments, which I think is pretty controversial, but I think the thing that can really balance out that perspective is knowing that it is multiple measures. So there is some sort of standardization, so there's that objective measure, but then there's also school-based, district-based measures, and also, I think people overlook this sometimes, classroom-based measures of student growth, so informal things that a teacher with their evaluator can choose. Stuff can even be exit tickets. I know in my school that's something that teachers have used informally when I was teaching. So I think while it's controversial, people need to really dig into it and can see that it's not just whether your students have this grade, you're going to be fired or hired. It's a lot more nuanced than that and balanced.
We had another question. Are these evaluations formative or summative? And Are teacher peers formally involved in the process? Are students involved in the process?
I want to answer the second question first. So in terms of having peer observers and student perception surveys, having students rate their teachers or provide feedback that will go into the evaluation, that's something that could be in the multiple measures and is allowed to be, but it's not explicitly made to be in it. So that's one of the ways that districts have some flexibility in terms of implementing TPEP. I'm not quite sure what you mean by formative or summative, if you mean in terms of the assessments that are being used for evaluating the teacher, or if you mean the evaluation itself. Oh, okay, so I think Shelby said that maybe you're talking more towards the evaluation. Is that summative? So implementation should go through a number of stages of evaluations throughout the year. It shouldn't just be one end-of-year summative assessment. So there'll be growth plans involved throughout the year. Hopefully that answers the question.
And then we had a last question. One person is seeing in her work that there is a lack of time to implement TPEP effectively, and that principals are being pulled away from so many of their other duties, plus continued training is necessary. And now that the legislature is moving to 1080 of instruction in grades 7 through 12, it takes away more time from professional development. And so is there any talk about how we're supposed to successfully meet these goals? 1,080 hours is what Sandra meant, up from 1,000. Thank you, Sandra.
But this question is really about implementation and whether there's time to implement it in the plan for 2015-2016, it being fully out there. I think the thing to keep in mind is that this is supposed to be tied to professional development, not take away from professional development. And I think people are looking at it to make sure that it's implemented well and that principals are supported in the training and in implementation. You saw the slide earlier, a number of states had early rollout so that some districts could sort of have additional time. And the OSPI report that just came out, the one that we quoted a few things from, is also talking about the time of implementation. So people are sort of looking into it and weighing it out right now to make sure that it's done well and that people feel supported. But I think the biggest thing here is that it has to be done at some point because it is such an important thing. So we do have to do it in a timely manner.
Well, we just want to thank both Margo and Sandy. That was an excellent presentation. And don't forget, if you missed parts of this presentation or if you'd like to download the slides, they're available on our website at educationvoters.org. Our next lunchtime webinar will be held on December 19th. And to register for this webinar, visit our website or look for an upcoming email from us. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.